Hey guys, it's a girl OA, and welcome back to the Simply Vet podcast for undergraduate veterinary students. And on this podcast, you'll be getting summarized audio content from your working lecture materials. So, is it anatomy, physiology, or biochemistry, or even other related veterinary courses that you come across during your undergraduate years? Guess what? Simply Vet podcast has got you covered. All you need just do now is to hit the subscribe button on your Google Podcast app so that you get notified on each episode release. So let's get on board. So today we are going to be looking into the reproductive system of pets, and I want you to know that theirs is quite different from mammals, that is domestic animals. And this is because only the left ovary and oviduct are functional, while the right one remains vestigial, that is rudimental. And this is so because the left ovary secretes AMH, that is antimullerian hormone, which suppresses the growth of the right ovary. So that's just a simple explanation of why the right ovary is not functional. Okay, so in a bit while we're going to look into the functions of the ovary and the oviduct. So get your pen and paper ready. Before we get started, there are also some differences in pets that you will not see in domestic animals. And one of it is that the chicken has a continuous follicular phase in which ovulation occurs daily, unlike in the mammals, okay? And because theirs occur daily, you call it ovulatory cycle. And there is no corpus luteum formation in the chicken because chicken does not get pregnant. The third one is that their reproduction is by ovoviviparity, that is, the offspring leaves the mother body after a short period of embryonic development and it undergoes the rest of its development outside the mother's body. That is, the avian egg, okay, when it is laid, it must be able to support embryonic and fetal growth. And the way it does is that it contains nutrient materials like the yolk, albumen and shell in it. Okay, with that being said, let's then look into the functions of the ovary and the oviduct. So, the ovary of domestic species of bird consists of two, the medulla and the cortex. And the medulla is made up of connective tissue, blood vessels and nerves, while the cortex is responsible for the thousands of oocytes that are going to be formed. And they increase to about 4 to 10 millimeters in diameter. So, at the time of sexual maturity, that is between the age of 18 and 20 weeks in the female chicken, okay, about 4 to 6 of the follicles increase in diameter and the follicular hierarchy is what's being established. And this is how theirs is named. It is starting with F1, followed by F2. F3, F4, and F5, unlike in domestic animals, where we say talked about terminal follicle, primary follicle. So in chicken, it is called F1, F2, F3, F4, and F5. Okay, so let's then look into the oviduct. Good. So in the female chicken, the oviduct is a long, tortuous tube, about 100 millimeters long. And it extends from the ovary to the cloaca. And this oviduct consists of 5 cells in chicken. 1. The infundibulum. 2. Magnum. 3. Isthmus. 4. Uterus. And 5. Vagina. So let's quickly look into the functions of these 5 segments of the oviduct. Okay, so the infundibulum is a funnel-shaped structure at the anterior end. Okay, and it carries the ovulated egg. And it is good to know that the infundibulum is the site of fertilization in the chicken. And also, it is also the storage site of sperm cells. Okay. And it is non-glandular, except at the narrow distal end, which secretions forms the perivitellin layer. Okay. And the chalaza, which is a white twisted strand of protein that extends from the yolk towards both ends of the egg. And it is good to know that the egg stays about 15 minutes in this segment, that is the inflammable of him. So the next we have is the magnum, and the magnum is the largest portion of the oviduct in a female chicken, and it is very conspicuous because of its dull white color, and it has thicker walls, more voluminous luminal fluid. It is glandular, and its secretions forms the copious amount of albumen on the egg white, and it is good to know that the egg stays about 2 to 3 hours in the magnum, and the regulation of albumen secretion is controlled by estrogen, androgen, and progesterone. Good. Next up we have is the isthmus, and it is a narrow, thinner segment with lesser luminal folds. It is separated from the magnum by a narrow, non-glandular band. Good. The isthmus is glandular, and the secretions forms the two keratinous shell membranes, which forms a sac enclosing the egg content, and it also provides support in which the hard shell is being cast, and the egg stays about 1 to 1.5 hours in the isthmus. Next up we have is the uterus, also called the shell gland, and it is a thick walled muscular organ with long narrow mucosal folds that is covered with ciliated and non-ciliated epithelial cells. And the egg stays longest in this segment, about 20 hours, during which, one, watery fluid is being added to the egg, causing it to increase in twofold in the mass of the egg white, following calcification of the uterus. And the shell gland also secretes proteinaceous cortical over the hard shell. And the third function of the uterus is that the uterine epithelium secretes shell pigment that causes distinct egg color in bird species. The last of which we have is the vagina, and it is the terminal portion of the oviduct, and it is connected to the cloaca. It is separated from the uterus by the uterovaginal sphincter, which is a constricting muscle. It is relatively short with a tubular gland, and it is capable for prolonged storage of sperm cells, and it functions as a passageway for the formed egg and sperm cells, and the egg stays about few seconds within this segment. So let's be looking into the process of egg transport and oviposition. Okay, so the total transit time for the egg along the oviduct is about 26 hours, and oviposition, which simply means laying of egg, is initiated by the contraction of the shell gland musculature plus the relaxation of the uterovaginal sphincter, and all these two pushes the formed egg towards the vagina, and it is under both neural and endocrine control. And the endocrine control of this is the AVT, that is the arginine vasopressin hormone, which is a variant of oxytocin, that's another form of oxytocin. And this AVT, that is arginine vasopressin, is released from the pituitary gland of female bird, and it plays a principal role in bearing down reflex and oviposition. Okay, with that being said, bearing down reflex involves changes in respiration and stance and the contraction of the abdominal muscle. That is what bearing down reflex simply means. And I want you to know that apart from AVT, that is the arginine vasopressin hormone, prostaglandins and a factor that is released from the ruptured ovarian follicle is also responsible for oviposition. So let's look into the process of molting, nesting, and broodiness that is found or that is exhibited by female birds. So under molting, okay, once in a year for about 4 to 6 weeks in natural daylight, a hen will lose its feathers, that is, it will molt, and it's very important because the hen will return to lay return to a lay at a level better than the pre-molt period. And there are some characteristics you find during the molting period, and it is that molting is preceded by a gradual reduction in egg production. Also, it is preceded by the regression of the gonads. There is also decreased blood levels of LH, that is luteinizing hormone and progesterone. And there is increased thyroxine production. Okay. Also, the hypothalamus becomes insensitive to the stimulating effect of daylight, and thus a positive feedback action of progesterone on LH is decreased. Hence, there is a decreased number of ovulation in egg being. So that is all about molting. So let's quickly look into the nesting behavior. And nesting is a behavioral pattern in which a hen looks for a nest when it has an egg that is ready to be laid. And the stimulus for nesting is believed to be the ovulation that occurred about 24 to 25 hours earlier, rather than the actual presence of egg in the uterus. So that's all about nesting. So under broodiness, okay, broodiness in hen is said to occur when the hen takes out time from the laying period in order to sit and hatch her eggs, especially in turkey. And there are three causes of broodiness in a hen, and one is night nesting, two is increased levels of circulating prolactin, and third is presence of brood patch area on the ventral surface of the turkey breast or the female chicken breast. And this brood patch area contains sensory receptors that carries tactile sensory inputs to the hypothalamus to cause the release of prolactin. And it is this elevated levels of prolactin that causes gonadal regression and cessation of laying. And since this broodiness and feature exhibited by a bird is not so suitable for a commercial production, there are some practices that can help to handle this. And one is the removing of the nest, two is adding of intense 24-hour light, and moving the hens from one pen to another. Okay, so these are the management practices that can help to tackle this broodiness pattern. Finally guys, let's look into some few points in the ovulatory circle of avians, and there are about six of them. One, the increased levels of prolactin turns off the effect of LH, that is luteinizing hormone. Two, progesterone from the growing follicles stimulates LH surge, which in turn causes ovulation and then oviposition. Third, ovulation occurs about 35 minutes after oviposition. Fourth, LH surge occurs usually in the dark periods, about 4 to 8 hours before each ovulation and about 32 hours before each oviposition. Fourth, the above key points I made mention earlier, okay, does not conclude that LH surge is restricted only in the dark hours or photoperiod. Instead, if LH surge occurs during the day, a random egg laying would be observed. Fifth, the effect of lightning, that is both light and dark, are environmental cues for the release of LH hormone. And finally, the ovulatory circle is regulated by the anteropituitary hormones, which are luteinizing hormone, follicle stimulating hormone, and prolactin, and is also regulated by gonadal hormones such as progesterone, testosterone, and estrogen. Okay, so guys, we've come to the end of today's episode, which is all about the summary on the female reproductive system in avians. So guys, don't forget to hit the subscribe button on your Google Podcast app so that you're notified on when I make a new summary. So guys, if this is what you're hearing, send me an audio message on what you think I should do, what you think I should touch on more. So guys, don't forget to share to your classmates who might need these notes. Watch out for future episodes. Bye for now.